At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Tuesday morning, March 9th, 2022. It is the Beating the Book podcast. Gil Alexander live from the D here in downtown Las Vegas. Tennis. We promised we would do tennis podcasts for all the slams. Well, we bent that rule just a little bit because this is tennis's de facto fifth major. Same week that golf, by the way, has its de facto fifth major at the TPC. This is Indian Wells, the BNP Paribas. I believe that's how we pronounce it. Paribas. At Indian Wells, men's and women's side. And the beauty of doing these tennis podcasts is that there are only two people on earth that I would really love to talk tennis with. One is Dan Weston. Dan Weston from Tennis Ratings on Twitter. And tennisratings.co.uk, his website back in the day. Dan will be joining us here within 15, 20 minutes. He's got some things going on there on the other side of the pond, so he'll join us momentarily. And, of course, the other one is the co-host of both the Deep Dive and Bet the Edge podcast from NBC Sports. He does Deep Dive with Andy Molitor. He does Bet the Edge with Sarah Perlman. It's our buddy Drew Dinsick at whale_capper. How you doing, man?
I am doing tremendously well. Excited for this particular Masters, this tournament.
Yes.
Excited to break it down. Don't get to talk a lot of tennis in my now that we both do daily betting content now, and I still don't get to talk about tennis enough, even though that's one of the things that really got me into this space in the first place. And yeah, this will be the seventh Indian Wells Masters that I'm going to cap match by match for the entire duration. And I can't wait for it, because this is really, in my mind at least, this is the kind of the true kickoff to the tennis season. People obviously know that, you know, they go through, you know, Oceania, Australia, in the month of January, where it's summer down under. But, you know, a bunch of the good players tend to be out of form then, because they take the winter off.
Yep.
And, you know, there's a little bit of weirdness about that time of the calendar. And of course, a lot of the matches happen in the middle of the night, so you don't even get to see them all. But here we are now, kind of, this is more of, in my mind, like the true kickoff to the tennis season. You get Indian Wells at the beginning of March, Miami at the end of March, and then we move right into the, you know, the clay court swing, which is really sort of the meat of the tennis handicapping season. So pretty important to pay attention to this one. You know, a lot of, you know, you're going to be able to really kind of gauge who among the young players who have caught a little heat early in the season can carry that momentum and win some matches here. And then who, you know, who's a pretender. And I think back in the day, at least, the conditions weren't quite as slow as they are now. And it was really kind of the perfect tournament to give everybody a shot. Whether you're a clay courter or a hard courter, you are kind of on equal ground here. And I'm curious your thoughts on the conditions, if you've watched any, if you, you know, particularly last year's, I thought, you know, told us something in the fall, and, you know, it feels like it's tilted more away from, you know, the big servers, the big, and more into the, you know, just testing these players from an athletic standpoint, an endurance standpoint, because it's so difficult to, you know, to win rallies now. You know, but it still is, I think, a good kind of gauge on a quasi-neutral conditions on, you know, in terms of who's got the quality.
Yeah, and of course, Indian Wells was played last year, as Drew was alluding to, not at its normal time. Remember, Indian Wells was, when the pandemic hit, it was the first sporting event canceled. For those of us who are into tennis and who bet tennis seriously, I remember being at the airport in San Francisco on the Sunday night. Remember, most people think it's, you know, it was, oh, when the college basketball tournament was the Rudy Gobert, Tom Hanks night, followed by the college basketball tournaments getting shut down in real time on that Thursday. But the previous Sunday, so 4 days before that, those of us who were in attendance got the word that Indian Wells was canceled, and that was the first moment where you sort of knew, oh, no, this could be the world shutting down. Like, what's happening here? And then last year, wasn't played at its normal time, was played late in the year. It's... absolutely agree with everything you're saying. And let me just say this just macro for people. So conference basketball tournaments are going on this week. Most people in the betting world are obsessed with it. This is our happy place. Like, this is boring. Where we make our hay. It is, and those who follow tennis picks on a numbers game know how much I love betting tennis. But to your point, Drew, because even though we do the betting content every day, I had an unbelievable hard court season late last year. Even with that, when I do tennis content on the radio side, there's a little clock in my head, right? There's a little clock in my head that...
I only get so much.
I can only... That's right, because I realize that even though I'm doing betting shows, that it still doesn't cast the widest net here in the United States. If we were somewhere else, right, globally... tennis, a massive betting sport, as Dano can tell us. But I'm always aware that if I go too long, I'm going to lose the audience. And by the way, I thought the idea was to win bets, right? And I always make the case, hey, you could probably win more bets doing this than other things. But it is a thing. It's a constant conflict, which is why we bring it to the podcast side so that it will find its true audience. By the way, the last one we did, which was before the Australian Open, great response. I was really pumped by that. Yeah. Very good response.
Well, that was a fun one, and it was a fun Australian Open. Obviously, the finale didn't go my way, but it was still one of the greatest tennis matches we've seen in years. Maybe going back to the five-setter between Federer and Nadal, where Federer came back from that long layoff and got a one more slam. You thought maybe it was the end of his career, but you know, carried it obviously into a nice little couple more seasons there. But to react to a couple of thoughts there, for sure, tennis. And, you know, I definitely gravitate towards, you know, hey, are we watching the best people in the world competing in something? And, you know, when it comes to, you know, that's why I like the Olympics. That's why I like, you know, tennis. And this is absolutely as stacked a field as you could ever hope for. You have a lot of really cool, you know, up and coming players on the women's side. You have some emerging players on the men's side, on top of the fact that, you know, Rafa Nadal has retaken, you know, the throne as one of the most dangerous men in the world on any court, let alone a slow court. There are a lot, you know, this is an absolutely stacked draw. This is going to be a fantastic tournament. And, excited to handicap this whole thing.
Well, let's start. I'm hesitant to start on the men's side because I don't know how much Dano has gone on to the ladies' side. But let's start with the ladies first. Why don't we do that? Because that starts today. We're putting this out on the Tuesday morning. Ladies start one day earlier than the men do, and we'll get into the shenanigans of the men's side because the men's side is a bit problematic to some degree. But we can still get into our thoughts there. But the ladies' side has been set and. The news, for those who didn't hear well prior to the tournament, is that Ashley Barty, the number one player in the world, she pulled out of not only this event, but also the Miami Open. And then just on the eve of the tournament, if you will, the person that was going to be, the lady that was going to be the number one seed, given Barty's absence, Barbora Krejcikova, she pulled out last night with an elbow injury, which none of us really saw coming. And I had already made a bet, getting back to your question of how do the conditions affect some of your picks. I had already made a bet on my girl, your girl, Iga Swiatek, to win. Świątek. To win. Yeah. Proper Polish pronunciation, pardon me. To win this.
No, you nailed it.
Yeah, to win this Indian Wells tournament. I got her at plus 750. I banged it a few times. I like the conditions for her. She got the most powerful forehand on tour. She's just coming off. Now, the one thing is, can you win back-to-back tournaments? That, in terms of your participation, she's just coming off her third career win. Remember, of course, the French Open, her first win, obviously, on clay at Roland Garros, famously, in 2020. Famous for some. She won at Adelaide.
Infamous for others.
Yes. nightmare for others. By the way, still pending, I should point out. Adelaide is where she won her first hardcore tournament, and then she just won when she stunned Annette Contivate in the finals. I can't even remember where it was now, but she just did that in her last part, in the last tournament she participated in. By the way, Contivate, for those who don't know, was virtually unbeatable in this long streak that she had. She was moved to tears in the finals. Świątek was crushing her so much. So I like Iga's numbers. She got my futures play, but it is, just so people know, number one player in the world, substitute number one seed in the tournament, are not participating. So what you have now is Arina Sabalenka is really the top seeded player by default. Świątek, the second highest seeded player.
Yeah, I think that was a good breakdown. Krejcikova, if you didn't know, who was a band, you know, I mean, it was a little bit of a sticker shock to see her coming in as the one seed anyway.
Yes, like, it was.
Holy smokes. Like, she's done enough to be the one seed. And, you know, her withdrawal was a surprise. Her section of the draw, I thought, was pretty soft.
Which is Iga's section as well.
Now
Iga's half anyway. Iga's half.
So now you look across sort of the players who exist on the top half of this draw, and there's no one that really scares you. So we kind of alluding to it, like what makes for what's the right recipe for success at this particular tournament. And I would say the last two cycles, particularly the fall cycle, and you could take this with a grain of salt because obviously the weather is going to be a little different this time around than it was last fall, although we are experiencing uncommonly cool conditions here. Yes. In Southern California.
Are you?
Over the next two.
Should I send a care package? Should I send a coat to you? Yeah.
No. I mean, we're talking like 60s. It is. It's tough times.
My goodness.
In Southern California. Yeah. No going to the beach today for me. But in seriousness, you know, we've seen this tournament be windy at times. We've seen it be hot and dry at times. It's not going to be like that at all. It's going to be relatively cool. It's going to be relatively calm. And you know, the court speed is among the slowest hard courts you can find on earth. They put a ton of grit on the surface here, so it really, really takes a huge bite out of the ball. It takes some of the, if you have a player who you think excels, say, hitting flat shots, for instance, that they're in trouble. Because all of a sudden now they're, you know, that flat shot's going to come up a little, you know, it's going to pop a little bit higher, and it's going to be easy to be preyed upon. And if you have a player who is, you know, relies on quick points, you know, bang, bang, get it done quickly, and, you know, really kind of get games over quickly, kind of move the pace of the match along, doesn't want to play a long match, they're in trouble. Because there are going to be some long rallies. It's going to be, relatively challenging to do things quickly. And, you know, in general, that tends to make for exciting tennis watching because there's lots of comebacks. No player, it's best of three, both men's and women's. No player who loses the first set is ever really out of it.
Right.
Yeah. We saw some qualifiers yesterday. Woman won. Who is a Krunic, went up 6-0 in the first set, lost the match. It's like that. Yeah. So that, no one's ever really out of it. There's lots of comebacks. There's lots of kind of grinded out sort of deals. And, so anyone that you would kind of tag as, okay, this is an Iron Woman or an Iron Man, and they're just going to win by attrition. Those are the ones you want to have circled. And you brought up Świątek's powerful forehand. That you need that shot in your bag.
Yeah.
If you're going to succeed here. Like when I think about the men's side, like this is the perfect tournament. And I was sad. I'm sad we're not going to see a comeback from Dominic team here. We didn't see it in the clay swing in South America. But Like Swiatek's got a lot of the same sort of characteristics that Team does in terms of her style of play and her, you know, her strengths. And I always think of this tournament as the ideal team tournament. And, you know, for those reasons, I think it translates well for, you know, Swiatek to do well as also. And then, as you pointed out, her half of the draw, is kind of a who's who of players who are out of form. In her quarter two, Claire Towson's tough,
yeah,
but you know, certainly not, you know, this is, you know, she was more of a scary player on the, you know, kind of court speeds you had in Australia. Similarly, you know, Kasatkina, Swiatek's played her, what, 3 or 4 times this season? That's going to be an interesting head-to-head if that's your fourth round match. Kerber's out of form, Svitolina's out of form, Bencic is out of form, Keys is out of form.
Yeah.
Muguruza is a little bit of a wild card.
A little scary. That's, yeah.
A little scary. Probably your quarterfinal there, but Swiatek, I would make her maybe minus 200 in that match. You know, so you're talking about a pretty clean path through to the semifinals, and then that first quarter is as weak as they come. Halep probably wins by attrition, and so you're looking at likely a Halep Swiatek semifinal. And you know, if you remember back to your French Open win, we saw Swiatek take on Halep.
Yes, we did.
It was not pretty.
Well, that was the match that changed the world, right? That was the match in the middle of that tournament where Iga was still, well, she was like a $4 dog in that match or something, if I'm not mistaken. Or was she $4 to win the tournament? I don't know. She was a massive dog.
It was a big price, yeah.
Yeah, and when she won that, she became immediately the tournament favorite at that point because people finally got it. They're like, oh, my God. Because here's the thing. Iga's A game is about as good as it gets. The only question is for her, can she get over the mental hurdle of beating someone like a Barty in a finals kind of thing? It's the only sort of thing. Beating Kontaveit in that tournament final a couple weeks back or a few weeks back, that was big to me. She crushed her. So that sort of answers that question a little bit. By the way, where do you stand on, speaking of that half, where do you stand on Coco?
She hasn't done anything this season that is a red flag. I kind of have had an open mind on Coco and I think her coaching is taking the first half of 2022 relatively conservatively. Like they're going to let her try to build into the season, see if, maybe, you know, some of the other players kind of, you know, shoot their shot throughout the clay swing, because Coco's going to be fine on clay, but not like especially great. I doubt she wins a title in the first half of this year. But then once we come back to America and she's kind of got a little bit of confidence, she's won some tough matches against some good players, I think they probably push her hard through the U.S., you know, Canada, U.S. swing, see if she can kind of really emerge as a top player. That would be my strategy for her if I was a coach. I would try to position her to make a run at the U.S. Open where, you know, she's got the support of the crowd, and, you know, can really kind of, you know, take the crown as, you know, USA number one.
I feel contractually obligated to ask you about Roderick Kanu as well, even though I can anticipate your answer, but I'm sure there's someone listening to this is like, what about Emma? We did so well with Emma in the US Open. Where are we on her?
I have not been impressed by her form this year, but, and that's putting it politely. There have been moments where it's been like, oh man, she's kind of lost the plot here.
How did she change her coach after that, Drew? What was she doing, man?
I don't. It was not a strategy that I would have embraced.
And it's our armchair quarterbacking either. Like at the time, it felt bad.
Here's the other weird thing, and I'm not British, so I'm projecting a bit. but you could have been a Raducanu kind of a breakout at the U.S. Open and be a U.S. player, and people are going to embrace you and just absolutely love you for those 2 weeks, and maybe the week after, and then things get like real quiet again for you.
Yeah,
you know, and you can kind of refocus on your game, and you can kind of go back to the lab and keep where, you know, kind of continue to build your success. Raducanu, it felt like she got thrust immediately into like, oh, you're the most important British women's athlete of all time now.
Of all time. Having some perspective on it, it's one of the most qualifier won the U.S. Open. And by the time she got into the semis, it was already history. But then she went to the final. She beat Leila Fernandez. We'll get to the second half of this draw momentarily. But I mean, it really is an amazing story. But you're right, the pressure on her.
Yeah, yeah. And not just the pressure, but even just like you don't even get a chance to like let it breathe.
Decompress, right.
Decompress, right. Yeah. Like immediately when she went from a major title to like expectations that now she's like the greatest tennis player in the world. And you know, I think she won like Sports Person of the Year in the UK, you know, and like they care more about tennis, obviously, in Europe than we do in the United States broadly. And so I think that there was a lot of attention and a lot of pressure, and she's young, so it's not entirely surprising. I wouldn't write her off by any stretch of the imagination as far as being able to recapture that form. But it may take a little while, and obviously the change of coach didn't help anything. But she has played 4 matches this year. She lost badly to Rybakina. Oh, she yeah. beat Sloane Stephens in a match that Sloane Stephens didn't really look interested in being there. She lost to Pavinic to get ousted in Australian Open. And then she went down to Guadalajara and was fighting against Gavrilova. But ultimately retired. So Raducanu probably not going to be a factor here, and realistically probably going to have a disappointing 2022 by the looks of it.
Let's go to the other side of this, the other half of the women's side, and we will get to the men's here momentarily. But on the other half, and I'm just talking seeded players here for the time being, Badosa, Leila Fernandez coming off a tournament win at Monterey, which, by the way, I don't know if you saw that. She staved off 5 match points against Maria Osorio, formerly Maria Osorio Serrano, Maria Camila Osorio Serrano. And then on the fifth match point, right before the fifth match point, the point that got it to the fifth match point, the stadium lights flickered, and there was a 30-minute delay. Not 30, 20-minute delay. Fernandez was like, I'm not playing this fifth match point until you fix this. She comes back, she staves off that one, and she wins it in a tiebreaker. So she's in there. Elena Ostapenko, who's been in just, she has been in phenomenal form. Jesse Pegula, who I love as a player, daughter of the Buffalo Bills owner, a billionaireess, if you will. Contivate, the aforementioned Contivate, she's on that side. She's been unbelievable, particularly indoor hard, but still always a threat. Sakkari, who still can't seem to get over the final hump, but is always a threat. And then you have the Kvitovas and the Mertenses of the world. Jabeur is on that side. So Sabalenka, as we mentioned. By the way, when you were going, so all of those are seeded players on that side. So it is stacked. And when you were going through your stuff at the beginning there, Drew, where you're like, oh, the type of player that might really do well here is the one that can sort of just win it by, you know, I don't know. I sort of in my head, as you were saying it, being a backboard, basically, right?
Yeah,
playing
sure,
really long
sure.
points. Maria Osorio is who I was thinking of when you were saying it. I hadn't thought about her before, and I'm not saying she's going to win the tournament, but she's one of those players where, man, do you hate betting against her for that reason.
Yeah. Those were all very valid points. And I think the overall takeaway from everything we've talked about to this point is that the draw is imbalanced.
Yes.
The top is weak. The top is weak and the bottom is strong. That's going to make for good tennis watching on the days that the bottom is playing. But it also makes it very tough to pick a winner here.
Sure does. On that side.
The Fernandez was amazing last week. But boy, did she play a lot of tennis.
I wouldn't
be surprised if fatigue is a factor there. And even if I'm fine crossing her off because I don't love her game against Ostapenko anyway. And Ostapenko is peaking right now.
Can I just say this? I mean this in the most appropriate way. She is adorable. After she lost to Raducanu in the U.S. Open, her speech was unbelievable. She wins this match in Monterey. I didn't realize she was fluent in English, Spanish, and French. So it's like, it's hard not to love her. Obviously can't let that affect your bets, but I agree with you about the Ostapenko point.
Yeah, no. And I think Fernandez is, I mean, it's cool to have a in the absence of, Bianca Andreescu, it's cool to have a Canadian, factor in all of these, again,
Bianca ever going to get
the
right?
Other,
is she ever going to get right?
I don't know. It's tough to project positivity there for whatever is going on. The other player, there's 2 other players we didn't mention, and they're both, again, the third quarter is just absolutely stacked.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't mention in the first round, Anisimova.
Yes. Who won a tournament this year?
She won tiebreak tens yesterday. I'm not sure if you saw much of that.
Oh no, I meant to.
The little exhibition tournament they do down there. She was dynamite. I think she stepped in for Krejcikova, who was a late scratch and won the whole thing.
I realize who I missed after Anisimova. What an obvious miss I just had here in terms of naming.
Oh, Osaka?
Yeah, Osaka.
Yeah,
who's not seated here.
Also,
right.
Also in the third quarter, yeah. No, both, I think both have to be given some consideration. If this is an Anisimova-Osaka quarterfinal, I won't be shocked by any stretch of the imagination. But you're right, Kontaveit is a factor. She is dynamite. Pagula has been playing well. She usually does especially well in the United States for whatever reason, although I don't love the conditions for her game.
True.
I think, I'm not going to say like, oh, this is a huge value bet because of the way that the draw shaped up. But I had serious hopes for Anisimova at this tournament just because she played a lot of tennis at this venue last fall. I think all told, she went right from the Indian Wells tournament at that time right into, World Tennis Challenge or whatever that was, and that was all contested here, so she's very familiar with these conditions and really kind of has the right game for this, and her prices have crashed, so I don't think there's value anymore considering how tough she has to go here, she's going to have to take on some big names, and she may be a dog price against the likes of Fernandez, Ostapenko, Badosa, and maybe potentially Osaka or Kontaveit. I think that run right there is going to get you to like a 30-1-ish return just to get out of this quarter. So keep an eye on Anisimova and her quality, her form.
Always tantalizing potential. No question about it. So I have the Swiatek bets, Swiatek bets in my pocket, and I'm very pumped with those. I made them pre-draw, and the draw worked out for me, as we just discussed. Did you make any futures plays on the ladies' side?
No, I'm sitting tight. I think realistically, if I had to at this moment, Iga is the obvious look because the imbalance.
Yeah.
Again, as you're getting into the futures market, my golden rule is if they have to do all of the hard work themselves, then you're better off betting them round by round.
100%.
If they're on the other, if they're in the other portion. And this goes for March Madness, too. If you're a college basketball fan and happen to stumble yourself into a tennis podcast.
That's right. And we will do a college basketball podcast next week, I promise.
Take your shots on, take your shots on the teams that are in the weak portions of the draw. Because, as you know, Iga's not going to have to beat Badosa and Fernandez and Ostapenko and Kontaveit. She may not have to play any of them. letting chaos ensue in the third quarter, all that does is add equity to your ego position, in my opinion. I don't really see anyone in the top half that scares me at all.
Did you make any first round bets for today? Because I did.
Ooh, I didn't. What do you got?
Okay. So I didn't make any on the men's, obviously, it doesn't start today. It starts tomorrow. But I will tell you that because of the schedule, I have only been able to focus on the ladies' side. I have not. And maybe for the best, as we'll find out here momentarily with what we're going to discuss, I've really focused on the ladies' side. So I made three bets today, two short favorites, one dog. I gave these out on a numbers game this morning. Prices may vary, but none of these have started yet. We're doing this at 10:12 a.m. Pacific. I think the first of these starts a couple hours from now, and the other two are this evening. So two should at least be good for most listeners. But I went ahead, and I'll give the caveats as to how these could get torpedoed. I went ahead and played Diana Yastremska at -125. She's taking on Caroline Garcia. Caroline Garcia has really outperformed her numbers here in the recent short term. And the deal with Yastremska is she is Ukrainian. And she escaped, and I do mean escape, pretty dramatic escape with her sister from Ukraine just prior to war breaking out. Her parents basically said, "You girls go." And she spent like three sleepless nights in a, not to make light of it, but it was like a planes, trains, and automobiles thing to get out of the country, to get to the border. And so she ends up in the tournament in Lyon, the indoor hardcourt tournament in Lyon, and she has this unbelievable run. I bet against her a couple times, got it right in the final with Shuai Zhang, which, by the way, was very nip and tuck. But Yastremska made this unbelievable run. She got all the way to the finals. She loses in the finals. And so my only concern here is, because the numbers come out where Yastremska should take her down, especially with Yastremska's game on this surface. But you do worry about, okay, she had this great run in Lyon. Is this a bit of a letdown now after the unbelievable situation she had getting out of her home country? I am sort of, buoyed by the fact that the tournament didn't start as tournaments normally do on the subsequent Monday. So she's had a few days to soak this in. So I'm going with the numbers. Even with those caveats, I'm taking Yastremska -125. I also took the Brazilian Beatriz Haddad Maia.
Now we're talking.
You like her?
Yeah.
I've taken her against Sofia Kenin. For those who have listened to my tennis thoughts for years, remember we had Sofia Kenin in that Australian Open that she won. One of our great futures plays in the past. That ain't the same Sofia Kenin that's been playing on the tour of late. Haddad Maia's numbers, quite frankly, on hard courts are just far superior to anything we've seen from Kenin in recent time. Could Kenin somehow recapture that Grand Slam winning form? Anything's possible, but I like the price on Haddad Maia. And then the third one I took was a dog, Victoria Tomova, +142 against Claire Liu. Two players that I'm sure most of the audience, unless you're a real diehard tennis bettor, aren't aware of. But just the numbers on this is just a numbers play. I don't think this should be any worse than a coin flip. So I love taking Tomova at +142. She might be able to just house her also. So I love that price. So those are the three. You like the Haddad Maia play though.
I like your first two. I don't have a read on Liu at all. Tomova. Yeah, no, I can't tell you that the fair. It's 50-50 match, I guess. So if you got a dog price, that's good. But I agree with you on Haddad Maia. I think realistically, if she can, if this goes to a third, she's going to be odds on, pretty decent. And she could get her in too because Sofia is obviously here by via wild card. And your Yastremska number, I would have made that about -150. You said you got -120.
Yeah.
Or 125.
125. Yeah.
That's a good look. And your points are valid. Like you worry a little bit about travel and recent success if this is starting on Monday, but she's had a couple of days to really kind of acclimate, so shouldn't be an issue in that one. I think she carries her form through to the second round.
Well, I would like to get off to a good start, so that's day one here on the ladies' side. Again, the men's side starts tomorrow. We Dan Weston is ready to go, by the way, so we're efforting Dan to get his thoughts. I'm curious if he has any thoughts on the ladies' side before we move on to the men's side. Let's see if we can effort Dano while we're finishing up here on the ladies' side. But anyway, that's a pretty good basic rundown of the ladies' side of the tournament. The men's side, as we effort Dano, we can only start with one name. And even the most casual, even a person who doesn't necessarily follow tennis, would have gotten the word about the Australian Open, that the whole run-up to the Australian Open, which Rafael Nadal ended up winning, in dramatic fashion, the whole run-up to it was, would Novak Djokovic be able to play? And he flew to Australia. Remember, there was a, okay, you're allowed to play. Then they went to, like, the federal level, and they're like, nope, you can't play. And so it was this whole thing where he had flown into the country because one body, I think, told him that he could play, and then the federal said no. Anyway, it was drama, and he doesn't end up playing. And Rafa Nadal ends up with his 21st Grand Slam singles title, which broke the three-way tie at 20 between Nadal, Federer, and Djokovic. And so now, with Indian Wells, Drew, well, I'll let you update everybody. How would you characterize this?
A cluster? a travesty? I mean, for a better...
Travesty-mockery?
A shamockery? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
For a handicapper and a better, it's a monumental annoyance. Because it has not been especially easy to get a bet down on the outright market with the without some understanding about whether Djokovic is going to play or not. Now, I don't especially make him a factor in this tournament regardless. You know, I'm expecting he won't play. I'm expecting he probably won't withdraw until the order of play comes out. And at that point, then a lucky loser gets the 2 seed. So congratulations on ruining a second tournament of significance in the year 2022, Novak Djokovic.
Congratulations, Novak Djokovic. So just to clarify, so Novak Djokovic is, so we're 24 hours away from the men's side starting. We just talked about the ladies' side. Dan Weston now join us at Tennis Ratings. How you doing, Dano?
I am well, Gil. Sorry, I've joined you a little bit late.
It's quite all right. Which quite all right. Everything okay? Everything taken care of?
Yeah, all good. Yeah, I had to pick up a car earlier and it got delayed. So,
okay. Well, you need your car. That's so, for sure.
Indeed.
I want to get your thoughts. Do you have, first of all, let's wrap up the ladies' side because we're sort of perfect transition point. Your overall riding thoughts, have you, you've done both the men's and the ladies' side for this, Dano, or have you focused just on the men's?
Yeah, I've looked at both, actually.
Okay.
I've said it so many times before, but the women's tour is, you know, there's 20 or 30 players who are capable of winning, especially now that Ash Barty's not going to be playing, and I think that she's the dominant player on the tour, obviously, on hard court. Now, you look at the brackets, and it's hard to really look past Simona Halep in quarter one, which is it looks a pretty weak quarter in general. I Emma Raducanu's numbers have really dropped off on serve this year, post US Open triumph. We haven't seen a lot of Karolina Pliskova lately. Zidanecek's a clay quarter. Coco Gauff is still, you know, still maybe has a bit to find at the top level. And I mean, that's surely is Halep's to lose that quarter. And we'll see how the draw opens up from there. And then the stacked quarters, if you like, it's probably quarter three with Osaka as an unseeded player. Pegula, Badosa, Kontaveit, Vondrousova, even though maybe she's injured, and Ivsimova also as an unseeded player, all in quarter three. I mean, that's the group of death, if you like. So that's a tricky one. Swiatek looks a justified pre-tournament favorite in bracket two. For Muguruza and Keys. We've done well on Swiatek over the last couple of years.
Yes, we have, Dan.
And then in quarter four, I don't mind maybe even a Ons Jabeur or a bigger price or I'm reluctant with Azarenka with fitness issues, but there's some scope maybe for some bigger price players in quarter four. Maybe I think Sabalenka's very overrated by the market.
I do too. Like, and I just, she is one of these players that the actuality never lives up to the numbers or the hype, right? It just, in a big match, feels that way. By the way, Dano, you may not have been with us, but Drew, was that pretty much a good echo of everything we just got into?
Yeah, strong agree. You can get Jabeur 7-1 to fourth quarter. That's a solid look. I agree. Sabalenka's overrated. I have eyes for Anna Samova in the quarter three, but rather than take the 10-1 price, I'm going to better match by match. Swiatek on the top half, Simona Halep, class of quarter one. We agree with all that, and ultimately Iga coming out on top is where we landed.
Yeah, the absence of Barty, certainly Krejcikova too to some degree, but we all are sort of in agreement that was kind of a strange number one seed anyway, in Barty's absence. But yes, that the top half was far easier than the bottom half, and yes, exactly what you said, that the third quarter specifically, the hardest of the bunch. Did you bet any outrights, Dan? Beyond the quarters, did you bet any?
Nothing really. And going back to what Drew said though about the Anisimova as the match in match by match. I mean, we might get some nice prices on her against Fernandez potentially in round two and Ostapenko in round three. So that, those are a couple of lines to look out for, I think, early doors.
For those who aren't familiar with what you do, Dan, how much? Because you're a numbers guy, and I've always said this. Dan Weston to me, if I only had one bet to make in any sport, Dan Weston is the guy I would call for tennis, for a tennis bet. Dan, how much of what you do, though, so let's say your numbers come up, you like Anna Samova against Layla, and let's say the betting number works out for you. How much of what, because we alluded to it earlier, Leila just played a lot of sets, a lot of tennis on her way to the title in Monterey. How much of that plays in? That kind of wear on your tires is something you consider, yes?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, she won two matches via a final set tiebreak, which does put a bit of mileage into it. But then I'm not hugely worried in this circumstance for several reasons. One, that's her first tournament since the Australian Open. Two, is that we've got this kind of a midweek start with this, this tournament. And she's probably not going to play her round one match until, or say round two match, having got a first round bye until Friday. So that's, she's had a not far off a week off since winning in Monterey.
I like that point. I made that point with one of my picks today. Did you make any first round ladies plays today?
I didn't get a chance to look at today's schedule, but I'll be having from tomorrow for the men's.
I said the same thing about Yastremska, about the fact that it starts on a Wednesday was just enough time to let me not worry so much about a hangover for her, especially after escaping Ukraine and then getting all the way to the final in Lyon. Let's go to the men's side. Let's go to the men's side, because we've covered the women pretty thoroughly here. So we were just getting into it. And so essentially what Drew was just saying, and we'll put it in one sentence, which is Novak Djokovic, we're 24 hours away from the men's side starting. And Novak is included in the draw despite his unclear vaccination status. So in the case of Krejcikova's late withdrawal, they just sort of plugged in Alizé Cornet. The match is already set and it's a go. With this, like, you got to figure the drop dead on this has to be pretty soon, right? Because they got to make a schedule. Like, if this was anybody but Djokovic, wouldn't they have moved on by now, Dan?
Well, is there, you'd know better than me, Gil, is there not a regulations to enter the country in terms of...
Yes.
If you're not vaccinated, do you have to do a fixed period of quarantine and things like that?
We believe so. We haven't checked the latest because these are always, as you know, a moving target. But yes, for most of the time, that has been the issue. And so
we also have no idea what Djokovic is doing.
Right.
His camp is, yes. he could be in Serbia. We have no clue.
We have no idea. And so have you found it difficult? So we have found it difficult on our end here stateside to find men's outrights. Was that a problem for you as well?
Yeah, it is at the moment, and the Betfair market, when I checked before I went out this afternoon, is very, very illiquid at the moment. So, and I think that there'll be several reasons for that. The first reason is that probably people are focusing on the women's tournament a little bit more because it starts earlier, and secondly, because, you know, that I think I came on just as Drew was talking a little bit about Djokovic and whether he's a serious runner in the tournament. And I mean, he's a serious runner in any tournament that he enters, but I completely take the point is that it's really difficult to provide an evidence-based case for him in this particular event. He's played one tournament in Dubai where he lost as a 1.06 favorite to Jiří Veselý since the Davis Cup in November last year. It's one tournament. We've got all these off-field distractions. We've got the complete lack of match practice and great player or not. That's tough to overcome.
By the way, that Jiří Veselý run in that tournament, where he beat more than just Djokovic, right? He beat Shapovalov. Yeah. Who else did he beat? I can't remember now. But it was like three.
Did
or
he
four.
Beat Shapovalov, or did Shapovalov beat himself?
Well, yeah, there's that. Right. isn't that just to let people know? Because you could do stuff by the numbers, you know, and we do, and that works out for you long term. But it's just that reminder in sports betting, isn't it? That sometimes things happen that there is just no evidence to support what's about to unfold. Very sobering, you know. I finally gave in and bet him versus Shapovalov because I was like, okay, I'll give in. But that was
I think Dan's points are all very fair. Like, we don't really have a good you if you're doing an Elo based type of number for Djokovic right now. I'm not sure what you're basing it on. You're speculating to a large degree about what kind of form he's in. He obviously got worn down by the quest to go for the Calendar Slam last year. We didn't see especially great tennis from him after the, you know, the US Open's final loss. When he was expected to play in Australia, I thought he was, reasonably fair co-favorite with Medvedev. But ultimately, I was more than happy to take a shot at Medvedev against him, just considering all of the hoopla going on around him. And then, to Dan's point, like, he's got 5 titles at Indian Wells throughout his career. It's not like he can't win here, in the same vein that Nadal, for whatever reason, can't win in Miami. Certainly this is not, he hasn't been successful here since 2016. We've seen him have some absolute stinker, laughable performances here in years past. I look back to year 20, there was 1 year he lost to, there were a couple years he had some very, very poor performances here. It looks like, my database isn't loading, unfortunately, but didn't he lose to Taro Daniel embarrassingly in straight sets here 1 year? Do you remember what I'm talking about? This preceded like his big comeback where he won at Wimbledon over Federer, I think. So whatever year that was. He hasn't been especially good at Indian Wells. Indian Wells has continued to change the conditions in a way that go away from his strengths, in my opinion. And so the fact that in the handful of markets that are up right now, he's the tournament pre-favorite is crazy to me. I mean, if you can bet, field against Djokovic at a price of +185, I make that meaningful value. And of course, he would have to start for that to be paid. So it's not really worth going to the trouble. As far as I can tell you, he's not going to play, and some lucky loser is going to get the 2 seed. He's waiting for the pandemic to end before he returns to tennis, apparently. May happen this spring, but we remains to be seen.
We talked a little off air, Drew and I did, about the fact that, he's waiting for it to end. In the meantime, Nadal surprisingly won the Australian. You got to figure Nadal wins the French. All of a sudden, legacy standpoint, you're down 2 in the Grand Slam bid. That's got to be weighing on his mind. And also just non-numbers-ish. This role as an international villain, right? Like, he doesn't handle it very well on the court, does
True.
He?
No. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, so you have to also factor in that if he's waiting for the pandemic to subside or to disappear, there's no guarantee he's ever going to be as good as he once was.
That's right.
Having not played a certain period of time. So that's a gamble in itself. From his
piggyback on that, the rest of the tour is getting better.
Yes.
On top of that, like the men's tour is in very, very good shape right now. Assuming Nadal stays on form, assuming team comes back, assuming Zverev fixes whatever's going on with his
brain,
mental state.
Yeah.
You actually have like a bunch of young up and coming players who are capable of challenging him and he's not going to have had reps against these guys and know exactly how to beat them. So, he's playing with fire for sure in terms of legacy.
Well, any day you stand still in any industry is a day you fall behind.
That's right. If I don't do a week of a numbers game, Drew, oh my God.
They're coming for you. They're coming for you, Gil.
in that vein, piggybacking off what you're saying, let's look at these quarters, and I'm looking at the top quarter. Medvedev, Monfils, Alcaraz. That's Alcaraz for the Castellano pronunciation. Alcaraz. Bautista, good Cam Norrie is in there. And of course, Tsitsipas. I mean, that's a hell of a quarter right there.
Yeah, son is.
Good Lord, what do you do there? Do you like anything, Dan?
Okay, so for me, not specifically in the quarter, because I still think that Tsitsipas has a fair bit to find generally against the real elite.
Me too.
Elite couple. Alcaraz Garcia should enjoy the slower conditions here that you tend to get here rather than compared to the average hard court, for example. Clay quarters do have a slightly better record over the years at Indian Wells than they would have on a normal hard court tournament or average hard court tournament. So he's someone to kind of keep an eye on a little bit. And on that basis, we've yet to really, even though he's you know, one of the best players on tour, arguably the best player on tour right now, Medvedev is still quite unproven in slower conditions. He loves it quick. He's probably not going to get that over the next week and a half.
Right.
So my angle more is to look at fading him with a pick on Nadal in Q2, given the fact that Nadal probably will enjoy those slower conditions. He's won, I think, the last two games against last two tournaments that Medvedev's played. Nadal's beaten him in Acapulco and in Melbourne. And I think that there's more scope to looking at Nadal at a slightly bigger price in Q2 than Medvedev in Q1 as an outright. Obviously, Nadal also is unbeaten this season, 15-0, which is a positive as well. So I think that actually this tournament is kind of Nadal's to lose to some degree. And certainly if you can get a bigger price on him than you would on Medvedev and Djokovic, then that seems pretty solid.
Is there, if we take Nadal, well, we're not going to take Nadal out, but let's for those who are looking for a player besides Nadal who said, okay, this person has a puncher's chance to use the boxing logo. You mentioned Alcaraz. Is there somebody else in there?
Everybody. Field over Medvedev in quarter 1. Honestly,
yeah,
like there's so many of these guys have a chance against him. If there were one hard court where if you're to tell me like Medvedev will go on and he will win, every Masters but one. What's the one that every hard court Masters but one? What's the one that he never wins? This is the one that he never.
This is
the especially
one.
The way that they're changing the conditions. They're literally moving it exactly away from his strength. And you know he's got the endurance. Sure, he's a tough, mentally tough player. But they did him no favors with this draw. Quarter 1 is the toughest quarter. Mm-hmm. You have both. Both of your finalists from the fall in quarter 1 on a collision course for a rematch, Cam Nori and Nicolas Bajelasvili. Of course, everyone remembers the 2021 Indian Wells final between Cam Nori and Nicolas Bajelasvili. A very predictable final. Those guys are both in quarter 1. It's going to be, Cam Norrie's in fine form, even though I think he's somewhat of a scam in terms of his overall talent. He's certainly finds a way to win. Alcaraz is dominant. He is up and coming. He is in great form and is obviously, kind of taken his, strength and fitness to the next level in the off season. So he's going to be dynamic in this particular, tournament, these conditions. Monfils going to be a tough test for Medvedev. I mean, you can realistically convince me that Medvedev could go out third round, fourth round, quarterfinal, and I would not be shocked. And even assuming he makes it that far, he draws Nadal in the semifinals. And if 2022 has taught us anything at this point, it's that Nadal occupies a space that is at least half of Medvedev's brain at this point. the five losing a five setter like that's going to do things to you mentally that it's going to take a long time to get over, and he'll have the chance to do it on a different court, maybe at Wimbledon, something like that. Different conditions, different court, maybe different level of the tournament, but a semifinal in these conditions against Nadal, you have to make Nadal something like a minus 200 favorite in that particular match, in my opinion, just based on what we saw in Acapulco. Nadal's quarter 2 is not especially tough. Sinner will be an interesting test, but Sinner obviously hasn't shown an ability to kind of bring an elite level when the going gets tough against like the world best. So I don't know that I'm afraid of anyone else in quarter 2. A shame that Seb Korda is probably going to draw Nadal's opening round match in second round. I would have liked to see Seb Korda get a more favorable draw.
Seb Korda is such a great example of a player who's like all the potential and talent in the world, but he still runs up against the elite of the elite, and it's like, God, should have been born another time.
Not to be seeded. I mean, it's just outside the seeding spots.
Yeah.
Yeah, he needs to be seeded. Yeah. He's only 21 now, so we'll give him an opportunity to continue to he needs an off season like Alcaraz had. he needs to really step up his strength and fitness.
Good lord. Alcaraz came back like a monster, didn't he, from the off season? I was like, what is happening here? When we were talking to the ladies' side, Dan, I joked I was contractually obligated for the casual tennis fan and better who's listening to this podcast to ask about Raducanu, because obviously they remember her from winning the U.S. Open. I'll ask the same, contractually obligated. I kind of know the answer, but I want to get your thoughts for everybody on Andy Murray, who was once part of the Big Four, who's a wild card entry here. What's the realistic sort of ceiling for Andy Murray here?
I think anything in advance of round three would be a real achievement.
Terrifying to bet against at times, but third round would be an achievement.
Yeah, the problem I found with Murray is obviously we know he's pretty inconsistent on bar at this point in time, but also his return game is not nearly as effective as it used to be. So you remember the Murray of old. He was one of the best returners on tour. And now he's running at barely above average numbers. And so that's a problem when you don't have a dominant serve like he's never really had. That's a big problem for him. Looking at his numbers this year, I just pulled them up on the screen. You'd say that he's probably pushed just above average on the ATP tour, maybe top 40, top 50 kind of level. Anything over the third round, he should probably be pretty happy with it.
The other thing here, I'm just sort of just riffing. The Isners and the Opelkas of the world, little downgrade because of the surface here.
I think so, because there's going to be less chance of tiebreaks as well.
Right.
Yeah, I think real quick on Andy Murray, he may come into this event with a little bit more of a motivational angle, because he did end up in a portion of the draw where he could make a fourth round. And if his ultimate goal is, I need to accumulate enough points, I need to get my ranking up to where I have a better seeding for, say, try to make a quarterfinal run at Wimbledon or something like that. Like, this is an opportunity where he can scoop some big points if he makes a run.
That's a good point.
And right now he's going to draw what, qualifier in round one, I believe.
Quali in round one.
Quali in round one. His round two opponent, Bublik, he's already defeated him this season in Rotterdam. Round three, you're potentially facing the winner of Thompson, Goffin versus whoever the lucky loser gets that Djokovic seed. So if he wins those three matches, which are going to be winnable, and he's going to have a day in between because of the way this tournament is spread out, he'll have time to kind of rest and recuperate. I could see him get to round four.
That is a good point. He's got a little cozy corner of this draw.
Yeah, there's no one actually even in the top half of that section that's especially spooky.
I'm looking at that too. I'm like, wait a minute. Are you sure he's only stopping there? That's kind of why I asked, but yeah, I didn't really know.
The fourth quarter is the worst.
The implications of Djokovic mean we could find a big price player get to the latter stages in this quarter.
Yeah. Yeah, Hurkacz, Rublev, Rublev probably wins.
I've got notes on Hurkacz. My notes, Hurkacz, although he's not playing particularly well at the moment, Karatsev is a dangerous player to go against. And in slow conditions, call me mad, but Schwartzman, could he run?
Oh, that's who I wanted to hear, Dano.
Take the quarter. Take the quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's not crazy. He hasn't especially impressed me this year, but
yeah, he's had a choppy year. Yeah,
he is a pest, and these are the exact kind of conditions that would favor him to outlast some of these guys. We're kind of dancing around it, but I think in the same sense that we talked about how the women's draw was imbalanced and the top half was weak and the bottom half was strong.
Same here.
Would say almost the same thing, yeah. If not more exaggerated here, where you have the top half is very, very strong and the bottom half is very weak, which I think opens up the door for the guy that I have eyes for at a very, very favorable price of 22-1 in the third quarter. And that is Felix Auger-Aliassime, who has been playing incredible tennis this year. And I think can thrive in these conditions. I was wildly impressed with what we saw from him at the ATP Cup. Until he ran into a white hot Medvedev, he was dynamic in that tournament. And then similarly backed it up, almost came away with the impressive upset of Medvedev at the Australian Open. And no one who's in this third quarter outside of surprisingly informs Zverev goes toe-to-toe with him to take the third quarter. And then, as we mentioned, he could face someone quite beatable in the bottom half semifinals. So I think Felix has a really nice path to get to the finals here. At that point, he'd probably be a 4-1-ish dog against someone like Nadal in the finals, especially considering his history in tournament finals, which is not grand. But he got off the schneid. He broke his maiden this year, so who knows? I think he's the one player that truly stands out in terms of quality and form on the bottom half of the draw for me.
Yeah, Felix, who was 0-9 in finals before he broke that, as you said, broke his maiden there. Go ahead, Dan.
That sounds right to me.
Yep.
Yeah. How do you feel about the fact he might be still injured from withdrawing from Dubai with a back injury?
Yeah, that felt a little bit more cautious. Like he wanted to get back to the Western Hemisphere and try to tune himself up for these tournaments. But to be fair, I didn't watch a ton of Dubai, so it may be more serious than I realize. It would scare me more if this were like a Rome schedule or a Madrid, something a little more compressed and they had to go back to back to back. The day break in between gives me a little less concern about any of these guys who are kind of dealing with injury concerns to a degree, but it's a fair point that I don't have a great answer for.
So then just to clarify, so the favorite bets here, Nadal's tournament to lose, I think we've established that. And then assuming Novak's withdrawal, which is an assumption, by the way, we still don't know because we have no idea about anything at this point, really, that there might be some opportunities in that fourth quadrant and certainly on that bottom half, essentially, is what we're saying with the names we talked about. Those are, maybe it's an Orkots. Maybe it's an Auger-Aliassime in the third quarter. So there's definitely opportunities that could present itself. And I agree with you, Drew. Like now, as I'm looking at this, this might be more imbalanced than the ladies' side. You're absolutely right.
What would be the best from a dramatic storytelling standpoint? Let's get Felix with Uncle Tony in his corner
against
giving him all the secrets.
Yes.
On how you with tactical advantage. Over Nadal in the finals of Indian Wells. That would be
awkward, good. I believe is what we call that. Awkward.
Uncle Tony.
Dan, did you have a chance yet to make any first round men's bets or not yet?
No, because I'm going to have a good look at that probably more my time, which is going to be middle of the night for you guys.
Yeah, I haven't either. I just did the ladies' side. Nothing on me.
Yeah,
Drew, you?
Let me pull up the current prices, but my round one strategy for Indian Wells is generally to look for qualifiers who are hot. It takes a little while to get used to these conditions. And if you're not a good enough player to be, a ranked player, if you don't have the quality to be a ranked player at this tournament, then you are, in my opinion, somewhat susceptible to a hot qualifier. And so once we don't know what those, how those are going to shake out just yet because no one's qualified. In general, of the lines that are up, I'm surprised Dimitrov is being given any respect, even against a player like Tommy Paul. Dimitrov has been wildly unimpressive in 2022 so far. He obviously made sort of like a last ditched effort as far as trying to get some you know, momentum going at this tournament last year. And since then, it's just has not looked good for him. Borna Chorich is fair to take on in terms of maybe Davidovich Fokina in straight sets. I would be blown away if Chorich shows us much quality after how long his layoff has been. And then let's see. Those are the two that stand out for sure. Manorino against Nakashima might be a
one match. Yeah.
Nakashima is so overrated. It's weird what's going on. I don't love Manorino at all. Like, he's not my guy. I'm not going to go to war with Manorino. But
he's been
Nakashima
so great this year, though. Manorino has been phenomenal.
He has been good this year, and Nakashima, for whatever reason, like, just has this market respect that I can't even come close to with my numbers. So, Dan, do you have a thought on that?
This is where we differ. Okay, so I just had a real quick look at the schedule, the schedule that we know right now, with the qualifiers still to be placed, and I like Nakashima, and I'll tell you why. He has longer term very good underlying numbers, which I think points to the market respect that he does get. And while it's probably pretty fair to say that he hasn't impressed this year, the kid's very good, I think. He has a very, very high potential. And also, they played last month in Delray Beach, and the prices were almost identical. Manorino won 7-5 in the fifth. Now, those conditions in Delray Beach are going to be much more to Manorino's liking than he's going to get in Indian Wells. Manorino has an excellent record in quicker conditions. You remember him playing pretty well in grass for a number of years. He's done well in some warm-up tournaments. I think he was injured last year at Wimbledon when he was leading Roger Federer. There was you look at Manorino's record on clay, and it's shambolic. And you look and think, oh, these conditions are kind of like halfway between hardcore and clay in terms of maybe court speed. And I don't think Manorino's going to like it too much. And I think Nakashima as a sort of weak favorite is pretty good.
Oh, talk to me out of it. I will steer clear of that one.
That's all it took. Talk about it. He made a very good case, didn't he?
Yes, very much so.
Also, Manorino's only won two matches as a dog at Indian Wells in his whole life.
What are we seeing? What are we seeing as the price? I'm looking for a price on this match. Nakashima is a minus 139 favorite, I'm seeing.
Yeah, Manorino's a short dog. It's not enough to get involved with considering all those points. How about Thompson versus Gauffin? Gauffin has been looked quite over the hill so far this year. I'm surprised. Yeah. I'm surprised Thompson's not a small favorite in that one. I'm getting plus 123 right now.
Maybe I didn't see the match, but maybe it was the decent win over Ruusuvuori in Davis Cup that kind of might have some form of an influence on the price. I don't know, but you're right. Goffin's numbers very, 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 very poor over the last year, and specifically on hard court where he's holding under 70% of the time.
Dan, let me ask you a general question, because we often talk about 12-month data, 6-month data, and obviously we talk about surfaces and there's different grades of hard court, and obviously dependent upon the number of matches and grind that any of these players have had. But when do you let shorter term numbers, if you do at all, influence you? Yeah. So if somebody, let's take a guy who's got great long-term numbers, great 12-month, maybe not quite as good 6-month, but almost as good. But then you see a dramatic drop-off in, say, 3-month numbers. Like, when do you let...
You can say Nakashima like that. It's a very good example of that dynamic.
Who's that?
Nakashima,
right. That's why it triggered in my brain.
Yeah. So for him, I would be less concerned than a Goffin, for example, because Nakashima's young. The curve will usually, we can see it on the screen, will kind of go upwards generally, but it might not go like that. It might go up and down a little bit with a general upwards trajectory in terms of ability as they get older. Sometimes you'd see it sometimes with players, so they get to like 21, 22 or whatever, and they get worse before they get better. and then they do get better. Whereas with Goffin, I mean, he's getting older now. He's more definitely in that veteran status. And you're thinking, okay, well, maybe that decline is more terminal.
More terminal. Good word.
Yeah. So it's, I think it really depends. If an old player is suddenly showing this massive drop off, that's a huge red flag. Huge red flag in terms of thinking that they're, I think they're, a lot of the time, I think they're pretty much done at that stage. If a young player shows it, I'm more willing to give them a little more scope to show improvement.
Yeah, because I'm always curious how you handle like the Raducanu, you know, skyrocket at a U.S. Open, getting to younger players now. We referenced Jiří Veselý's amazing week of tennis that he had earlier. Yeah. And like, do you just sort of shake your head and just say, well, this is aberrational, I'm not getting involved, or do you get convinced at some point, despite the fact that the data hasn't shown it quite yet?
With the Veselý, I mean, we've seen enough of him to know that the a career turnaround at his age is probably pretty unlikely.
Yeah.
And you do see it. Someone like Karatsev who kind of just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably maybe one example where you know, the exception to the rule. But Veselý, I think he's exposed enough in terms of his performances on the main tour to know that he's probably not going to turn into a top 10 player. And I think that's pretty clear. I tend not to react too much to, like, focus on one tournament like a Veselý. His numbers will form a consideration because they go into longer term numbers and they'll have weighting in that longer term numerical analysis. But I won't overreact to that. I think it's important not to overreact. And I think, let's say Veselý won a tournament and then he goes and plays a first round match on Tuesday the week after, I think some people will look at it and they think, oh, well, he's in form and he's got to be a bet. Well, I actually probably flip it around and say I'd rather fade him because the price is going to be short and he's going to be fatigued.
It's fascinating. I'm always fascinated by that because that is the, if this were all, you know, if this all played to form, right, is everybody would do it, it's that easy. But this is why it's always a fascinating egg on a plate kind of thing, right? It's a puzzle that we all have to solve. Yeah.
One other angle we haven't covered, and I'm curious of Dan's thoughts on this. Young Mr. Taylor Fritz has been somewhat inconsistent throughout his career, except when it comes to playing in California.
Southern Cali, he loves it.
He's a California guy. He tends to thrive in, you know, when he's kind of playing close to home. These aren't exactly conditions that, you know, you would think would do well for his game, which maybe makes this angle even more real. and he's got a tough draw because he's going to have to go up against a guy like Carreño Busta, who seems to be built for exactly this type of, this type of surface. What do you make of his chances of coming out of the third quarter? Because he's a pretty long shot price too. He obviously did well in this tournament last year. He's 100-1 to win outright. You could probably get some equity out of that if he makes round four, let alone, if he makes a quarterfinal, let alone a semifinal here.
Yeah, interesting one. And he's also got Zverev in his bracket as well, which is, further issues. The draw looks pretty tricky for him. You're looking at his numbers this year, and despite a few heavy favorite defeats by underdogs, his numbers are pretty good this year, and it certainly looks to have improved on serve. The conditions, as you say, probably a little away from his liking, but I mean, he's one of those young, he's still 24 years old, he's still one of those younger players who could make a little bit of a breakthrough. I wouldn't write him off.
By the way, a little American football news for you, Drew. My worst nightmare has happened. Washington trades for Carson Wentz. Just want to point that out.
What?
Yeah, I'm getting like 25 texts. If you saw me go to the phone here in the last 2 minutes, it's because I'm getting inundated with, well, my condolences, Gil.
Hey, Gil, you want some positive spin on this?
Please, anything. I'll take anything.
The 2023 draft class is loaded with good quarterbacks.
Thank you very much.
Loaded. Thank as you. Long as they did not give away their 2023 round one pick, Dan, you are in fine shape.
Dan, I don't know what your football equivalent of this would be, but picture a player who was once wonderful, then had an injury, and then has just been a shell of his former self, like just a terrible performer since.
Yeah.
There's parallels
for that for sure.
Oh, for sure. I'm sure. Well, gentlemen,
I think this sends. Yeah, Bryce Young is going to look great in maroon and gold as a commander.
Burgundy and gold, baby. Let's go, Bryce Young.
Burgundy and gold.
Yeah. All right. Well, guys, listen. As I said at the beginning of the podcast, this is my happy place. Nothing makes me more excited. Dan, we're having like a whole bunch of college basketball tournaments happening this week. Everyone's focused their attention on this. This is all I'll be watching all day long. Until next week when we'll do college basketball podcast. But I appreciate it to you both. I know you guys have done podcasts together on tennis with Pinnacle in the past. So I've kind of stolen that from them. So I appreciate you doing this. Hopefully we can get around and do it before the French Open if you guys are able and willing then.
Let's do it, Gil. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Yeah. Appreciate it. Drew Dinsick from the Bet the Edge and Deep Dive Podcast, and Dan Weston at Tennis Ratings. And of course, Dan, you're still doing your stuff at Betfair. That has not stopped.
Yeah, I'll be doing daily previews with Betfair for the whole of Indian Wells and also for Miami subsequently this month as well.
That's right. Miami on the heels of this one as well. So should be fun. By the way, again, my three picks on the ladies' side, short favorites on both Yastremska and Haddad Maia. With, again, the caveats about Yastremska's sort of hopefully not a hangover after performance last week. Hopefully Kennan doesn't somehow recapture her slam form from a couple years back. And I am on Tomova as a dog against Claire Liu. Those are my three ladies' picks today with the IGA futures. All in on IGA at 7-1 to win the tournament. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.